Hello, everybody, and welcome to Uncork the Sun with the Vinstitute Wine School. I'm your host, Moss Scherkogel. And in the Dutch language, you can translate the name Scherkogel to either mean blazing bullet, which is very cool, or you can translate it to mean crackball. All a matter of interpretation. We've talked previously on this podcast about the life cycle of grapevines, the way that an average year would go in the vineyard tending to them. Well, this is going to be the second installment of our little mini-series today, where we talk about the beginning of a grape's life cycle. And to start, I want to put you into a bit of a scenario here. I want you to use your imagination and pretend that you've just inherited a farm in some remote location, maybe Western Australia, and you fly out there and you've got 20 acres of bare ground with a few grapevines planted in one corner of the sandy soil. At first, it probably seems impossible to do something with this, but you consider you've got decent slope, good air drainage, got good temperatures for growing red wine grapes. And let's just pretend that even though I selected Australia as the location for your fictional vineyard, let's just pretend that you're not going to be murdered by snakes and spiders and silicon-tipped grasses and all the other creepy crawlies that haunt the nights of the Australian outback. And let's say you really believe that you can turn this vineyard into something. Well, the question is, where do you start? You clear the land, you kick away all the kangaroos, and like I said, you have a few grapevines up in one corner, but you want more. You've got 20 acres of land and you're going to plant it full of vineyard. And so your little adventure here begins with the same place that every vineyard's adventure begins, with today's topic, the planting of the grapevine. Now, in our little imaginary scenario with your Australian outback vineyard, let's say you're just outside of Perth, because if you're in Western Australia, you're either outside of Perth or you're in the middle of the desert. I mentioned before that you have some grapevines already planted, just a couple of short rows, maybe 40 vines in total. Barely a quarter of an acre is already taken up. And we'll say that it's Syrah, because the Australians love Syrah. They call it Shiraz, but that's okay, we'll forgive them. I've mentioned this detail for a reason. One is to prove the validity of growing vines on your fictional vineyard, so you know that it can be done. But the other reason is to make it easy for you, because you already have healthy, hardy vines, which means you can grow as many as you want, using either of the first two out of a total three planting techniques that I'm going to teach you today. First off, it's critical to point out that you never plant grapevines from seeds. And the reason is because grapevines are so mutable, they're so ever-changing, that in order to get a seed, you have to have some kind of pollination. Now, I've mentioned again and again that grapevines are hermaphroditic, which means that they can self-pollinate. But even still, you get mutation. And if there is cross-pollination, if you have a vineyard with, say, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay within it, and if some of the pollen from the Pinot Noir goes to the flowers of the Chardonnay, pollinates it, and creates seeds, those seeds are going to give you a new plant. It's going to be a hybrid between Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And maybe it'll be good, but maybe it won't be. And even if it is good, it won't be Pinot Noir and it won't be Chardonnay, which means it's not what you want. Even if one Chardonnay plant pollinates another Chardonnay plant, the third plant that is produced by their seed is going to be a unique plant. Technically Chardonnay, yes, but not the same as the Chardonnay that you started with. So unless you're explicitly meaning to create mutations and hybrids, you never use seeds for grapes. Instead, you use the first planting technique I'm going to tell you about, cuttings. Many people may have done this at home with something like raspberry bushes. You take a healthy piece of cane, you cut it down, and you stick it into a little bit of test soil, nursery soil. You keep that safe in sort of hermetic conditions, protected from the environment, protected from infection or disease or pests. And you allow it to start creating roots. And it's amazing how quickly grapevines will create roots when you give them the opportunity. A week, 2 weeks go by, and you basically have a brand new plant. Once you've determined that your new cutting is healthy, you can transplant it into the field. So in your Australian vineyard, you take some cuttings from your Syrah plants, which all of your neighbors are calling Shiraz, but you're not listening to them. You allow those to cultivate in your nursery, plant them in the ground, boom, within a couple of years, you're going to have acres and acres of grapevines. But there's a second way that you can use your existing grapevines, and it's through a technique that is simultaneously easier and harder all at the same time. And it's called layering. In layering, you take a healthy green shoot on your grapevines, nice and long, and you bend that all the way down. You bury it in the soil, you stake it, tie it to a stake so that it's going to stay put, anchor it down there. But first you cut the tip off or you cut a little notch in it. And even though this shoot is still connected to an intact grapevine that has its own root systems, it's going to start to root as well. And once those roots are well established, you can just snip off the connection that you made from the original plant. And just like that, one plant becomes two. Because of the hardiness and the persistent vigor of grapevines in general, and the fact that they can grow in adverse conditions, and they can take any amount of energy that's given to them and convert it into rampant growth, it means that starting out with even a single grapevine can net you an entire field full of plants if you're willing to propagate them. But now it's time to address the elephant in the room. Some of you may be wondering, Moss, first of all, is that actually your real name? Yes, it is. Next question. You might be wondering, Moss, isn't this a podcast about Olivera Soyuz wine country? Isn't this supposed to be about British Columbia? Why are we setting our fictional vineyard in Western Australia? That's a really weird choice. Well, you caught me, listener. Your cleverness and mental acuity never ceases to astound. I chose Western Australia for the site of your fantasy farm, because Western Australia is one of the very few places in the world where you can actually make use of the two techniques that I just described to you. It should be so easy, right? You have a grapevine, you make a cutting, or you bend it down, stick it into the soil, and you get more plants. Well, this is all true. That does happen. Grapes do work like that. But there's something else that would prevent you from doing this in most other parts of the world. Were you to make cuttings of your Syrah and plant them in most parts of France, or in California, or in Oregon, or even right here, British Columbia, every one of them would die. And it is because of a global issue that has plagued our entire planet for more than 150 years. The biggest obstacle, the biggest inhibition, the biggest issue with planting grapevines anywhere in the world is phylloxera. In the mid-1800s, there was a surge of interest in growing grapevines in the United States of America. It had long been known that there were grapes that naturally grew in the New World, but they were small, they were high acid, and they generally were not suitable for the production of wine. So in the 1850s and 1860s, American vineyard prospectors made trips to Europe to procure the lovely traditional wine-bearing grapevines that are scientifically known as Vitis vinifera. These are your Chardonnays, your Pinot Noirs, your Pinot Gris, your Rieslings, your Syrahs, everything that we know and love. But upon bringing vinifera cuttings back to America and planting them, the Americans found that all the cuttings shriveled, withered, and died. Even worse, though, and this is something I think we can all sympathize with given the way that the year 2020 has gone so far, but after the Americans left, the French farmers started to notice their own crops deteriorating. The event is known in history now as the Great French Wine Blight. And over the next 15 years, 40% of all France's vineyards died. It was an epidemic that sowed fear and paranoia amongst farmers. Previously healthy vines, vines that had lived for hundreds of years, were struck down in a single season by something the farmers could not detect at first. But eventually they noticed damage to the roots, nodules growing on the leaves, and a strange, invasive, voracious, almost invisible insect. That insect is now known as phylloxera, and it is a microscopic aphid, or louse, a wee teeny teeny tiny little bug that sucks the sap from cane wood. It gnaws into the roots of a grapevine or into their leaves. It drains their moisture and it stops the plant's circulatory system from moving water and energy throughout, causing the plant to wither and die. Make no mistake, I have talked about other pests in the past on this podcast, but there is nothing so dangerous or deadly to a vineyard as phylloxera. Originally coming from eastern North America, but rapidly spreading across the globe as steamships moved travelers and their dirty, dirty boots from continent to continent, country to country, phylloxera quickly became a global concern. Even today, the parts of the world that are safe from phylloxera are incredibly few. Western Australia, as I mentioned, is one of them. Most of Chile, a bit of Greece, a few tiny parcels of French Pinot Noir that are now used to make some of the most expensive champagne in the world. For a time, it was thought that Walla Walla was mostly safe, but just last year, in 2019, the tyrannical mite expanded its empire into Washington as well. During the Great French Wine Blight, a reward was put forward, a small fortune, for the person who could discover a cure for phylloxera. And that reward was never paid to anyone. For there is, as far as we know, no cure. No technique, no chemical, no predatorial species of animal or insect that we can bring in to stop the phylloxera. So how then is there wine in the world if phylloxera is everywhere and we cannot stop it from eating vinifera vines? Well, we may not have a cure, but we do have a means of prevention. Yes, we may not be able to stop phylloxera from eating vinifera vines, but there is a way to hide them, to mask them, to change them in a way that keeps the phylloxera from getting to them. And it's a way that uses the planting techniques that we talked about at the beginning of this episode. You see, the great irony is that while phylloxera came from North America, so too comes the solution. Or maybe it's not ironic, maybe it's appropriate. Because I mentioned before that there are grapevines growing in North America, and over time, those grapevines have naturally developed a resistance and an immunity to phylloxera. If the fine wine grapes from Europe are called Vitis vinifera, the humble grapes that we find in North America, grapes like Concord, grapes that are good for raisins, that are good for juice, but that are not so good for wine, they're called Vitis riparia. And having coexisted on the same continent as phylloxera for times unknown, the riparia vines are prepared to deal with them. They exude a sticky sap that plugs the holes dug in by phylloxera and prevent the phylloxera from doing severe damage. So how can we make use of the riparia's resistance? Well, the most important way is also the third and final type of planting that I'm going to talk about today, and that is grafting. It was discovered during the Great French Wine Blight that the incredible malleability and flexibility of grapevines meant that two distinct species could be stuck together and would function as one plant. What this resulted in was the first intercontinental grafts. North American riparia rootstock was brought over to France, planted in the ground, and then those grapevines were cut above the soil line, and little samples of vinifera vines were grafted on top. What this gave you was a plant that was producing Chardonnay fruit, or Pinot Noir fruit, or Merlot fruit, and yet was drawing its energy from a different species rootstock below it, with seemingly no negative impact. The wine didn't taste different. The wine didn't grow different. And because phylloxera lives in the soil, and the only part of the plant that was touching the dirt was the North American portion of it, these new grafted plants were immune. They were safe. You had all the flavor and beauty of vinifera vines suspended above the danger zone. And this grafting that was developed in the 1870s and 1880s is still the technique that is used today to avoid damage from phylloxera. So if you're looking now to plant grapes in a vineyard, most times you don't just do cutting or layering, because sticking a fresh, tender sprig of Syrah down into the soil is usually going to get it devoured by aphids. Instead, you'll buy pre-grafted plants from a nursery. What the nurseries do is they take their riparia rootstock wood, and they take a piece of their vinifera wood, which is called the scion, S-C-I-O-N, scion. They cut those to match, and they fit them together. They have to be the same size, because there's a thin layer of vascular wood inside of the plant. And just like performing surgery on a person, I guess you have to make sure all the veins match up. Then the nursery puts a little bit of wax around the outside of the cut to allow it to callus over for the bark to graft together. That takes about 2 weeks or so. And then by this time, it's maybe May, and they go and plunk it down into a nursery field where they let it grow for an entire season. At the end of the fall, when the vine has gone into a dormant state for the winter, they can just pull the little plants right back out of the ground again, check and make sure that the roots are being well developed, check and make sure that the graft has sealed up nicely, and then they toss it into a refrigerator where it's stored over the winter and sold to a lucky vineyard early next year for planting. And so for the last 130 years, that is how we have been getting our grapevines. By mixing together Vitis riparia with Vitis vinifera to give us a vine that'll produce grapes worthy of world-class wine, and yet which are also resistant to the most deadly killer in the history of viticulture. I guess if you wanted to avoid phylloxera, you could also plant hybrid vines, but I don't want to talk about that right now. Episode over! Thank you all for listening to Uncork the Sun today with me. I hope you all learned a little something about the planting of grapes, but also, most importantly, the most dangerous concern that we have to face when planting and maintaining vines. I've seen instances of flooding here in the South Okanagan where soil was pushed by water up over top of the graft marks of vines, and they had to be dug back down quickly for fear that the phylloxera living in the soil would get to the vinifera that was above the safe point. It's a constant concern, but something that, for the most part, we seem to have a handle on right now. If you want to know more about the vineyards and wineries that battle day and night against the terror of phylloxera down in Oliver Osoyoos wine country, the place to visit is www.oliverosoyoos.com. I hope everyone tuned into our live virtual Vinstitute broadcast back on June 9th. Because it was a bit of a continuation of our oak episode with some fantastic examples of wines that either had or did not have oak, and the impact that that meant for them. But that and all of the live virtual Vinstitutes are still available on the Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country Facebook page, and our next live stream tasting will be on June 23rd at 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific Time. We hope to see you all there because we're going to be talking about sparkling wine, which is one of my favorite things to discuss. To post about this show or about the live tastings, please use the hashtag UncorkTheSun. This podcast here is a collaboration between Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country and the Vinstitute Wine School, and it's released on Friday of every second week. If you have any questions about wine or winemaking, feel free to email me at moss@vinstitute.ca. The opening and closing music for this episode was provided by Olav. To hear more of his work, visit olav.bandcamp.com. And all other audio, including the creepy phylloxera theme song, is license-free from Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech. And the host has been me, Moss Sherkogel, still vividly remembering the taste and crunch of biting into an aphid inside a raspberry when I was 7 years old. And you think that insects can only scar grapevines? Woof. Whether you're experiencing the beauty of Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country from the comfort of your home, or whether you're planning a trip here for the future, we cannot wait to raise a glass with you and uncork the sun together.